Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. We are excited that you're here, and we hope you're in the right session. This is on church versus parachurch. Kind of some questions around that. So if you're in the right place, excellent. We are ready to roll. My name is Todd Chaffee, and I teach at Calvin College. I'm an assistant professor of congregational and ministry studies, and I belong to a brand new department here at Calvin, and it's called Congregational Ministry Studies. I've been here about a year and a half, and one of the neat things I get to do in my role in this new department is I get to work with all sorts of interesting people. Two of those folks are up here with me now. I've met both Andy and Eric over the course of this past year, and through our conversations, through our, well, as they say, telling our stories about our past experience in ministry and thinking about ministry, we realized that we have some topics that may be of interest to other folks at symposium. So here we are. So first, I'd like to introduce Andy McCoy. Andy is a visiting scholar here at the Institute for Christian Worship at Calvin College, and he has been working in different capacities from, group discussion work, classroom time, getting to know folks here at the seminary.
Trigg Johnson Fan Club at Calvin.
Trigg Johnson Fan Club, that's right. Second, we have Eric Kuiper. Eric, I got to know Eric first through his work with Young Life. He is a regional trainer, trainer of leaders, I guess, for the Young Life ministry here. And then just recently, he is now a pastor for young adults at Mars Hill Church in Granville. And so we've been working together in different avenues, especially through the Institute for Christian Worship, but also through the Congregational Ministry Studies Department as well. So I'm excited to have these two experts, shall we say, on the topic with us, but I'm also excited because I have two friends up here with me. So what we'd like to do this afternoon is we thought that we would just kind of go down the line, starting with Eric, and we're going to offer some reflections, some thoughts on our work in ministry, both in terms of church ministry and parachurch ministry, offer some reflections on that work, and that should take us roughly 5 or so minutes each. And then really what we want to do is open it up, because we find at symposium, some of the best work, let's say, that gets done is when we open it up to all of us who have a tremendous amount of experience in ministry. So just so you're prepared that within 15 or 20 minutes or so, we would love to hear what you think and love to hear what you have to offer to this discussion. Eric.
All right. Well, I'll take two quick stabs at this. One is my own kind of personal experience. As a kid growing up in the church and getting connected to a parachurch, and then flip over to kind of a vocational experience that I've had working now for both a church and for a parachurch. So I was on full-time staff with Young Life for 11 years until this past November. And I came into Young Life as a college student, a freshman in college. I was a youth group kid, as you would say, growing up in a Reformed church on the west side of Grand Rapids, and was pretty involved with that. I had a good experience with youth group and my youth pastor. He played a fairly significant role in my life growing up. So, like I said, pretty involved. When I got into college, kind of got sucked into Young Life through my brother and ended up having some pretty significant experiences personally early on with a group of Young Life leaders, which then drew me into becoming a volunteer leader, which pretty quickly progressed into me being on part-time staff with Young Life, which turned into full-time staff when I graduated from Calvin. And I distinctly remember sitting at having breakfast with my dad at Mr. Burger on Lake Michigan Drive. And probably a year and a half into my experience with Young Life, and just gushing to him about how I couldn't believe I hadn't been told all of these things that I was learning and experiencing in Young Life. That I'd grown up my entire life in the church, and I hadn't experienced all these kinds of things. And what I was probably very inarticulately saying was, this was for me the first time, because of the posture of this, you know, evangelistic, evangelical organization that Young Life is, that I really had this conversation with myself and people around me about what this really meant for me personally. So that was a big deal, that I'd grown up in this Reformed church, and it was a pretty pretty traditional Reformed atmosphere. I had a ton of knowledge in my head about the way things went and how things worked, but it was not my own. And so through Young Life and being a leader in Young Life, that's when I really grabbed a hold of that. And I now think of the things that I said to my dad at that breakfast and have apologized to him since. Largely because now, you know, being a little more mature and having, you know, retrospect, I realized that so much of what was going on there was, this was just the next click for me. That it was a really important thing for me in my growth and development. But the fact of the matter is that my experience with Young Life wouldn't have been what it was had I not had this experience growing up in this church. I wouldn't have been ready for that. And so what I think in this conversation of this, you know, parachurch versus local church is this kind of false dichotomy. One of the realities for me working for Young Life, I've spent most of the years that I led Young Life at Grand Rapids Christian High School. So doing Young Life in a Christian school, which seems in some ways, you know, to some it might seem almost antithetical. But what I came to learn was that the context had a lot to do with what we were doing. And in fact, Jamie Smith just mentioned this to our staff yesterday. I like the way he put it. He said, in many ways, Young Life in a Christian school context is a renewal ministry. It provides this opportunity to kind of flick that switch. For kids growing up in a really reformed tradition, it does bring, you know, as again, as he would say, maybe a really needed piety that is otherwise missing. So I think those are the benefits of the two things coexisting. And for me personally, having an experience in a church and having this experience in a parachurch. The other side of that is a vocational deal. So for me, just having my eyes open to what really drives these two different kinds of organizations, if you will, or institutions. And I realized that in many ways, in the parachurch, so again, my specific context being Young Life, the way we did things was what largely defined us. So if someone says, so tell me about Young Life, we're quickly going to talk about how we do things. We're going to talk about being relational. We're going to talk about being incarnational. We're going to talk about our strategies and our approaches. So the how we do things matter very much in this parachurch context. And I think that's pretty typical when I think of other parachurch organizations, that if you go to their website, that's what you're going to see a lot of, is they're going to hand you their how. Where in the church, it's much more often how isn't as much of an issue as the what and the why. So we have this more kind of a theological background. And again, especially I would say, you know, in Protestant context, in denominational context, we have become so defined by the specifics of the what we believe. It's those things that really drive the way things are being done. Now, it would be totally erroneous to separate your hows from your methodology from your theology. And in fact, in Young Life, we've spent a lot of time talking about the fact that our methodology is in fact a picture of our theology. And I would say this, the same is true in the church. They are deeply informing each other. But I think it's more an issue of posture and starting point, and that's been a big kind of aha to me, that you realize that in the parachurch, what it seems to be sacred is much more how you do things. That's your brand, if you will. And in a church or a denominational setting, this is kind of crass, but your brand is in fact your theology or your doctrine. And that changes the way you look at how you do things. So those would be a couple kind of contrasting points there. And now the visiting scholar will read to you.
Hello.
Right, I'm Andy McCoy. And, I'll start out by reading you a few thoughts here. I grew up amidst a confluence of church and parachurch influence. I was baptized and confirmed in a mainline denomination where I also served as an acolyte long before I was old enough for youth group. I sang in the children's choir long before I ever used a guitar in worship. I knew the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, and even why Epiphany is truly an epiphany. And yet I also spent much of my adolescence around groups like Campus Crusade for Christ, the Navigators, and Fellowship of Christian Athletes. While I was in high school, my church's youth group leader had left for another job, And the leadership that was left behind was not nearly as interested in leaving the church building to spend time with my fellow students. So a Campus Crusade staff member who lived in my college town of San Marcos, Texas, helped me start a weekly lunchtime Bible study that met at the local bowling alley across from my high school. There and at weekend gatherings in various homes, we often had college students with a guitar or two hanging out and leading us in a few contemporary prayer courses, praise courses, and times of prayer. Of course, this worship was much less structured than my weekly Methodist service, and yet I didn't really think about the two times as some sort of conflictual dichotomy. I simply saw different styles happening in different contexts, one happening amidst the stained glass of a 150-year-old sanctuary, the other happening amidst the crashing of bowling pins, cigarette smoke, and the ubiquitous smell of imitation nacho cheese, which permeated the sunset lanes. In my teenage mind, I was simply going into all the world to make disciples, or at least as best as I knew how in small-town Texas. Evangelism and discipleship were, of course, the primary emphases of these parachurch organizations with which I hung around. Their structure, while often student-led and therefore rather loose, was set up to accomplish such purposes in both training and approach. Yet no official staff I knew from these organizations found them to be in competition with local churches. In fact, in many ways, just the opposite. Everyone involved was consistently exhorted towards attendance at worship with their local congregation on Sunday. This example, in many ways, still sticks with me today. However, this does not mean that those I knew through the parachurch had a distinctly deep-rooted ecclesiology or developed understanding of liturgy. And truth be told, neither did most of those my age who grew up evangelical. When I left for college at a Christian university in the early 90s, like many of my friends, I found a world where non-denominational churches were springing up in droves and denominational churches were quickly beginning or already completing a transition to forms of contemporary worship. I found out about the term worship wars for the first time, though it never took much hold on me given the integration of many forms of worship in my earlier years. What did seem to make sense to my young evangelical mind was the changing orientation of church worship towards creating an inviting and unintimidating place for those turned off by more traditional forms of church. After all, even if my friends and I didn't fully buy into the idea of, say, Willow Creek's seeker-sensitive services, well, we were still trying to reach out to an increasing number within our society who had seemingly dropped out of the church universal's reach. I now believe that at this formative time, I was experiencing the cultural fruits of what Todd Johnson and others have labeled frontier worship. It's an often American-bred phenomenon in which the language of faith given through evangelism determines the language that one uses for God in one's ongoing life of faith. Out of old-school revivals, tent meetings, and early student movements grew the parachurch organizations so influential on my life and on the wider development of the evangelical church culture in which I found myself as a young adult. And in many ways, like me at my high school bowling alley, churches all over were shifting their liturgies and calendars to accommodate reaching out to the unchurched. Though in this case, the aromas of cigarette smoke and nacho cheese were being replaced by gourmet coffee and copious amounts of hair product. Yet what was not being replaced or repeated were the liturgical traditions and rituals that marked the denominationalism of my childhood. And I think Todd Johnson, he's here at this conference actually, he's a Fuller professor, rightly concludes that so many of these practices, things like corporate confession and prayer, the reading of creeds, celebrations of church season, all of these were becoming disconnected from contemporary evangelical understandings of worship. Now my point regarding all of this is neither to condemn the parachurch, which has brought about much good in my life and that of many others, and I still know and am involved with many people in the parachurch, nor is it to apologize for some of its problems. Again, on the one hand, I am hard-pressed to find leaders in most significant parachurch organizations claiming that their staff should not be active worshiping members in a local church. And on the other hand, even when we find parish clergy critical of the parachurch, their congregations are still likely to have on offer a form of contemporary worship with similar roots, roots similar to the parachurch. Rather, I believe that my experience illustrates that simply cutting off the parachurch from the church would obscure a more problematic dichotomy that often bubbles just below the surface of contemporary faith, and that is a pervasive belief that evangelism and discipleship have little to do with worship and liturgy, and conversely, worship and liturgy have little to do with evangelism and discipleship. This is the false dichotomy, which I believe goes unnamed in much of our evangelical experience, though a number of voices greater than mine are beginning to speak to this. Responding to this dichotomy will also, I believe, require conversations like the one we hope to have today, where parachurch leaders take seriously the worship, which marks us all as the body of Christ, and where traditional clergy come together to think about how our worship in the body sends us out to make disciples in all parts of the world, even in those nacho cheese-filled bowling alleys.
So one thing I'd like to do is reflect a little bit on some of the issues that have now arisen. But first, let me say, like Eric and Andy, I too have had very significant experiences in parachurch activities, and like Eric, primarily because the denomination I was a part of in my youth, I felt was not sufficiently reaching me. And so whether it was issues of style or content, I felt very much on the outside, pushed perhaps to the outside of my church. And so a parachurch organization gave me opportunities to express my faith in new and wonderful ways. But what I found interesting as I'm reflecting on this question, it seems to me that my issue then, and I still think in part with some parachurches, is the question was about my faith. So in other words, where am I in regard to my faith? And what it lacked at that point is any clear thinking on the nature of the church itself. So in other words, what is the church? So in thinking about church or parachurch, the commonality here is, well, what do we mean by church? What is that? What are we talking about? So in other words, it was one thing to talk about my personal faith and how it was kind of dying on the vine in the situation where I was as a teen, and then how it came more alive through what we're calling parachurch. And we all think, of course, that's a good thing, and it is. But then the emphasis becomes on, well, if my faith is growing, if I'm being met in terms of my faith issues, that surely can't be bad and it must be all good. But then the church, and even what we mean, gets left out, and it usually stays left out. So in other words, it seems to me that in a lot of parachurch settings, there really isn't clear thinking on what we mean by church itself. Now, that's true in churches, too. But I think it certainly is the case in a lot of parachurch settings where we're not clear, what do we mean by church? So let me start there. It seems to me that biblically, historically, what we mean by church does have some clear responses. Things like the proclamation of the gospel, preaching. We would be hard-pressed to call something church if there was no preaching of the gospel. Sacraments, Lord's Supper, baptism. For other traditions, of course, there'll be more. We'd be hard-pressed that if we saw a church never participating in any sacramental forms, we'd wonder, to what degree is this actually a church? Then there's issues like fellowship and so forth, and when you kind of combine all that, we start talking about the body of Christ. And I think those marks of the church, if you will, those marks of the church have a lot of historical precedent. So throughout the centuries, Christians have always wanted to both identify, revive, and reinstate these markings of the church. It seems to me, then, if that's the case, a lot of parachurch activity will come up deficient in some of those forms, particularly the sacraments. So there might be preaching and Bible studies and that sort of thing, but it will probably come up deficient around sacramental life. Third, along these lines, in terms of being the church then in sacramental life, one thing that the preaching of the gospel, sacramental life, does is it's there to help a community of Christians make sure that it never becomes an exclusive club. Because just by virtue of the preaching, by virtue of offering and administering the sacraments, we are really saying to the world, come one and all and receive these things and participate in these things. So to the degree some of those marks aren't there, in some ways we're already limiting the inclusive nature of what the church can and should be in the world. And I worry that a lot of parachurch ministries then are treating it more exclusively, more club-like, and that tends to function more often than not around peer identity. So, whether it's Young Life or Campus Crusade or whatever, a lot of the people who attend these meetings look alike. They're sociologically a lot alike. And so they would identify themselves as peers. Now, truth be told, a lot of local churches function that way. A lot of local churches function, I think, as exclusive peer groupings. But just to that degree, then, they're not living into and living up to these marks of the church that are meant to include all nations and be, you know, holistic in that sense. So what to make of that? So as I've been thinking about some of these issues and questions, like Andy, I'm certainly not ready to say do away with all parachurch groups. I'm holding a book here by David Fitch called The Great Giveaway. And I've been somewhat influenced by this book and his thinking on this. He would actually like to see a lot of parachurch ministries just go away because he thinks they're interfering with some of the core features and core commitments of what a church should be. I'm not prepared to do that, but I am prepared to at least say that to the degree a parachurch exists, it should be seen as supplemental to a local grouping of Christians that has as its target all people. So a parachurch ministry to me should be supplemental. It might be seasonal. It might be a time, an era when we need it. So, for instance, to the degree that a denomination lacks the skills or insight or vision to reach outside itself through evangelism, perhaps parachurch ministries can supplement that and be a kind of corrective and teaching moment for a denomination. Perhaps when a denomination or a local set of congregations ignores a certain group of people, like youth or whatever the case, then I think a parachurch ministry has a role to play. But I think it will be supplemental, and in that sense, I think it will have a limited life, or at least it should. Ideally, in some ways, I think all parachurches should start and end. they should start up for a specific reason, have a mission, and then they should accomplish that mission, we hope, to the degree that the local churches, the universal body of Christ, can benefit from that, and then they go away because they've served their mission or they serve their purpose. Unfortunately, I think, and this is where I'm also in agreement with David Fitch on this matter, a lot of parachurches, given our American cultural setting, remain institutionalized. They remain viable because we're used to having lots of choices. And so they want to always remain there as a live option. And I think to that degree, it gives the wrong impression to Christians, particularly American Christians, that just to the degree my faith isn't being met or my faith has needs, I'll go and see which choices I have, and I'll pick one and go with it. I think, again, if it's more of a supplemental move, the idea would be, okay, I had a need, I'm getting some of that met, but now I have to return myself to the local body of believers to which I'm called, and implement change or renewal or whatever the case, because ultimately that's where my primary commitments are. I'm committed to these people who both serve me well at times and don't serve me well. And so my choices have to be limited, finally, to kind of turn me back to the body of Christ to which I'm obligated, not based on peer interest, not based on felt needs always, but simply because I find myself in Jesus Christ, and that's where he also finds himself around these people that are frankly, quite hard to get along with. So that's all to say, I think all those types of ministries, I would include college campus ministries, all these kinds of ministries have to be seen as supplemental, finally, to the local gathering, an inclusive gathering when hopes of Christians, whomever, wherever, whenever, that sort of thing. As I said, we have about a half hour or so, and these comments, we hope, were ways to spark a question in your mind or confirm a question in your mind or get you to perhaps enter into this conversation, dialogue with a comment, however you see fit. So we'd like to do that now. We kind of want to just open it up, turn it over. If you don't mind, we have another mic that we would love it if you would use, not because we probably can't hear you, but because this gets recorded. And so all the symposium sessions get recorded and are archived through the Institute for Christian Worship.
Hello, I'm Chris Allen. I was part of Young Life Ministry for a few years, and I'm now the youth pastor at a CRC in East Lansing. I was wondering, is it possible for liturgy and church history to have a role in a paraministry like Young Life? What would that look like? Thinking about salvation being, you know, obviously incorporated some kind of personal relationship with God, but also being one to the body of Christ as covenant people. So How does a, I guess, bigger perspective, including things like church history, fit into something like that? And I guess it's for Eric.
Well, I mean, on one side, I would say yes, absolutely there is. There are venues for that. So again, in the specific Young Life context, typically you've got club, which is, you know, the outreach piece. You've got campaigners where that might make, you know, so that's more of the small group Bible study piece, where that church history thing might more logically locate itself. I mean, I think the bigger question is in my 11 years plus of being connected to Young Life, the tension that I always felt was, in fact, what role are we filling in the landscape of these kids' lives? In some ways, I would say, yes, if Young Life is trying to be all of these things for kids, then absolutely that stuff needs to be folded in. And I think, but the more it does that, the more it expresses itself as trying to be everything that this adolescent needs as far as their growth. And I think it's an unresolved issue in Young Life. What does discipleship mean in the context of Young Life? That in its startup it was really an outreach evangelistic organization. Now the mission statement is to introduce adolescents to Jesus Christ and help them grow in their faith. So it's both pieces of that for sure. And I think in every local context it probably plays out differently. I mean, I think there's a strong commitment here locally to try and really help kids grow and disciple them, and that looks like different things in different places. But you know, it's Young Life has been really great at the outreach, and I think has put most of its energies there. And I think it has done great things and has incredible discipleship opportunities for high school students. I think a kid who goes on work crew has an incredible discipleship experience. Any kid who has a long-lasting relationship with their Young Life leader, that's an incredible discipleship experience. So they are there and present and embedded in the organization. But the focus on discipleship isn't there in the same level that it is with the outreach. And I'm not saying that it should be that way. I just think that that's the way it is. And I think it's part of this tension of somewhat to what Todd's saying is, you know, Lynn, who's on Young Life staff, was just saying this yesterday. The former regional director for the Western Great Lakes region, which we're in here in Young Life, used to say, Young Life will be in business until the church puts us out of business. And that really was the posture for him, and I think for many people around here. It doesn't seem like we're getting put out of business very fast. Now, why is that? That maybe is the bigger question. So, is there a place for that kind of stuff within Young Life? Yes, there could be. But I think it's unsure. I think we'd all feel unsure about whether or not it should be, for the very reason of at what point is the church becoming the institution that does those things? So it's not an easy thing.
Karen Richards. I'm with the United Presbyterian Church of Ishpeming in the Upper Peninsula, and I serve on the board of the church camp for the Presbytery of Mackinac, which is owned by 42 churches. So I'm interested in how you see paraministries happening in church camps, if you have experience with that, and just your comments on that.
That's you, my friend.
So are you saying what are parachurches doing in the camping world?
And how they relate to churches?
I know the most about what's happening here in West Michigan. If you look around West Michigan, there are a number of camps. You've got Camp Geneva, you've got Cranhill. These are tied to denominations. At least they were at some point. And largely are fed and supported by those denominations. Young Life is a huge part of what Young Life is its camping ministry. There are 20 properties all over the country, and a lot of energy is put into those properties. How those weeks of summer camp directly connect to the relationship with a church. I would say no, you know, it's no different in the camp setting than it is in any of the other settings. I think what's unique about a Young Life camp is that when a student goes to a Young Life camp, they go with their local Young Life leader. So for me growing up, I went to Camp Geneva. I went to Cranhill. I had these experiences. And I had a significant week at Camp Geneva on Lake Michigan. And there was a counselor in my cabin who was a big part of that. I don't know his name. He sent me a postcard within probably a month of leaving, and I never heard from him again for obvious reasons. He had an entire summer worth of kids that came through that cabin. He held this place in that week in my life, and that's it. It's done. And that's the difference between a church camp and a Young Life camp, is that that a Young Life leader goes with their Young Life kids to camp. And so that discipleship piece relationally continues far beyond that week. I don't know that that's something that couldn't be done in the church camp world. It would be a big shift for sure. But I think that's what's made Young Life Camp so successful. And it is, camp is probably the most successful thing, if you will, that Young Life does. Pours a tremendous amount of time, energy, and resources into those camps. But that's what's at the center of that experience, is that relational, long-term approach to the development of this person. So I don't know if that even sort of answers your question, but...
Mm-hmm. That's what keeps that bond going year after year. So I was glad to hear that from you.
I just think it's a posture thing, to be honest. I think the difference between what we, even at a Young Life camp, when church groups would come and be a part of a Young Life summer camp, a church might say, hey, we'd like some spots. We're going to bring our youth group with us. And they would even come. Then the adults would come and be the leaders. Is that it isn't as embedded in the culture of many churches that those adults are actually there to be with those kids for that week. And I'm not talking about as a chaperone to make sure that they don't light anything on fire, but that they actually are the center of, in many ways, the center relationship for that week. And that, so you get many of the churches that would come, the leaders approach it as a chaperone. My primary function is to make sure no one gets, killed or pregnant while we're here. And then, I will be around and I'll go to the different activities with them. Now that's not the case with every church, but that was what we would run into, is a very, very different culture than a Young Life leader coming in who was there to be with those kids for that week and go home and continue that relationship. And so I think the more that I think is the great jewel that Young Life is, and it's not maybe unique to Young Life, but it is very much the center of Young Life, that I think any church could take that and run with it. It's so not, they so don't have to have the corner on that. And they don't, but that's the one thing that I think Young Life has to offer the local church youth group.
I'm Corey Plockmeyer. I work in campus ministry at Michigan State University. And one of the things that I've found, I'm with a denominational campus ministry. I find myself kind of between church and parachurch. That is, we are not officially part of the local congregation of our denomination. We're supported by them. We're supported by the denomination. And yet, we're intentionally meant to be outside of just the Christian Reformed kids who come to East Lansing. But yet we're also not parachurch, and we're set up differently, we're run differently than InterVarsity and Campus Crusade and some of the big parachurch organizations. I wonder if you could just speak maybe about the tension about, in your experience or if you've encountered any other organizations, the tension of being between church and parachurch.
Well, I might say something here, just give Eric a break, because he does such a good job talking, but... give you a breather. I'm sure you'll have a thought. Do you hear a theme with parachurches that you go to the geography, or you go with the people, and you're out of the building where they are, out of the church building and so forth, where they are doing ministry and building these relationships. I think that's a hallmark feature of what Young Life is called the incarnational approach. Now, I mean, there's a lot of theological discussion that can be had around how that's thought through, and if it's thought through well, and if all aspects of it kind of connect up to what we want to say historic faith is about. But at the same time, that's a big feature of that, whereas, you know, when you have the church, right, you have a place where people come. And it's not that the church can't go out and do this. In fact, I think that's what Eric is calling churches to do. And I think that's what a lot of parachurches would say, not just Young Life, that, gosh, if the church does this, then in that sense puts us out of business, and we'd be fine with that. But what I'd say is that what Todd said, at least from my perspective, is that the church is marked by things like the sacraments, and those things have impacts on our culture, impacts on the way that then we kind of turn out towards the world. I would wonder, you know, with what you're doing on campus, if you're in a very interesting position, but somewhat what Todd described, you actually probably do have to report, if not to a local congregation, at least to some kind of body of governance that is related to the denomination. And that, you know, that's just a different tension, right, than some of the other parachurches have. And I think that has a different flavor to it. But at the same time, I think it shows how all of these things these days get all mixed up and all get all kind of construed together, where it's hard to say, okay, that what you're really doing is all that different most of the time from what a parachurch is doing at Michigan State. It doesn't really look like that. So I think a big question, to go along with what some of Todd said here, is I think the church needs to be able to begin to articulate a better vision about how its work is formative on evangelism and discipleship. Then I think the parachurch needs to do a better job of articulating how its vision is a response to what the church is doing. See, the common hallmark for the parachurch is that you're not, once you find somebody saying, we're no longer part of the church, they're either A, creating a church, or B, they're creating a cult. So, I mean, you really, to be that flat sociologically, we've really got those two choices. So, I mean, they're going to either try to go for a definitive church somehow, or they're going to be something that really we're going to say is not part of historic Christian faith. So, in my mind, the church, in some ways, I think, needs to begin to take that lead. And I would be interested if churches that are doing active college ministries, and some have good ones, aren't a fertile ground. I mean, I think what you're doing is probably a really cool place to be in the discussion right now, because you have to still think with the church, and you're still thinking with the parachurch. So I know it's a lot of tension, but I commend you for your task.
Add one comment to campus ministry, because I, in some ways, I see campus ministry as that in between. I think, at least right now, as I think about it, I think they tilt more parachurch. Recently, someone who's been involved in campus ministry, college campus ministry, for over 30 years said to me, to the degree that a campus ministry is very, very successful, it hurts the local church. Because it's obviously then creating alternatives for students to actually go worship locally. Now, what to make of that? So that the statement in and of itself doesn't tell us whether that's good or bad, or, you know, it just is more of a fact in his mind. But it does seem to me that things like campus ministry, and I would argue all parachurch in some ways, these are opportunities, it seems to me, for specific forms of training to be better church members, you know. So Young Life, or, you know, they offer something that obviously Young Life started because of a sense of lack in some local churches. So Young Life can be a training ground for these people to kind of re-enter the local church and say, here's what you're lacking, and look, we can do this. I think campus ministry, just like all college education, is in some ways a training ground for how to live well later. As well as now, but later too, right? So there's that kind of piece. I think just to the degree then that these parachurch ministries, campus ministries, hospital ministries, whatever, no longer see themselves as that having that function in the body of Christ, I think they begin to take on some other form, and they're trying to become another church or something. And they often then even take institutional roots sociologically and in society, right? But then they lack the clear marks of what it means to be a church at times. So then theologically, we have to step in and say, okay, we need to rethink some of this now. So it's not, again, that they're necessarily bad or don't have a place. I think it's more a matter of being very explicit about what these tasks are and why they're important and where they're going.
I'm Trig Johnson, the dean of the chapel at Hope College. And to piggyback on what you're saying, I think that that's absolutely right. A campus ministry, I think, inherits a lot of people who have been raised and nurtured out of youth group culture, parachurch culture. For those that go to college, and I'm in a particular kind of setting where the institution, I'm part of the fabric of that, which provides a certain uniqueness where we worship four times a week, but very explicit about saying we're raising people up to try to prepare them for the church, recognizing there's not really young life after college in the same way, nor should there be necessarily. But some of those same instincts are applied there. I mean, we practice the sacrament once a week, gospel is preached, but we're not a church. We're not, all that to say is to agree with you. But my question is, one of the places that I find a real interesting interaction between the culture of youth group and the formation and the promises and limitations of that and the church and its culture with the promises and limitations of it is in moments of grief. For example, last year we had a couple students that were killed in a plane crash. I think we've been talking a lot about evangelism and reaching out, but sometimes I think the place where there's a lot of traction is around lament, is around issues of those deep losses that people are unprepared for. And I find the youth group culture doesn't quite have all the apparatuses to absorb that, yet they do have the strength of the relationships that sometimes the church doesn't have with them to enter in. And sometimes the church has some of the kind of the forms that and the language that can help name those things, but not always the kind of relational instincts or currency to enter in. And kind of being in a context that's unique where you're kind of in between these stages, I'm interested in both of you if you could speak to how in those particular moments where grief or loss or lament is really appropriate, how these two institutions can help each other, speak to each other, collaborate. Because I'm in a context where when a student tragically dies, they're part of another congregation maybe. Or maybe they were kind of loosely affiliated with the church, but they were part of a really good young life group or nothing at all. And that poses a real interesting challenge as a college pastor because you're brokering these other communities in the midst of that. And I just think that there's something that I'd really love for you to explore or think through out loud with me.
Well, two thoughts. One, where I think, well, first of all, you made the distinction between the youth group and the church, which I think is an interesting one. I think my experience with many youth groups is they are functioning almost as much as a parachurch organization as Young Life is. Their connection to the actual local body that they are connected to by name is about as close of a connection as what Young Life has with some churches. And I know that wasn't necessarily where you're going with that, but I think that there's something there to be said that just because this is a church youth group, that doesn't mean that those kids are any more part of the church, as we're hoping they would be in this conversation, than being involved with Young Life. I think to the grief thing, I think I would absolutely agree with that. But here's where I think something like a Young Life, a parachurch like Young Life, has an interesting place. So when I was at Christian High leading Young Life, the principal of Grand Rapids Christian High passed away quite suddenly. So it was a school. Certainly that was a tragedy within a local congregation, but this for these kids was a school tragedy. And within, a few hours, my living room was full of high school kids because it didn't make sense for them necessarily to go to their youth group if they were involved in one to do that necessarily because their whole youth group wasn't there. Now, certainly those other kids could have provided comfort and all of that, But the place that Young Life held in their life was, this is a school thing, and this is where they immediately flocked to. I'd say there's something really wonderful about that, and I think, to your point, I think there's something sad about that. Because, yes, the apparatus is maybe moving forward long-term. Maybe the local church is better suited for that. But the one of the attractional pieces to Young Life, and again, this is for better or worse, is the fact that it is built around a school setting, which is where kids find so much of their community. And again, I think there's upsides and downsides to that. So I guess I would agree with what you're saying. I think the larger church has maybe more players there with that. But I do think that these groups have the capacity to begin to do that. But the long-term grieving that goes along with that, yeah, that's, I think it's a fair point.
Yeah, well, I agree with so much what you said, Trig, and grief and tragedy are things that I really care about and write about quite a bit. And so I think the first thing that I would say is, in our culture, neither the church nor the parachurch has often done well with this. And so you have that whole layer for a lot of people of thinking, that either place actually won't be helpful. But that's not a helpful comment, because what you're saying is true, okay? So what you're, on the one hand, the church has the apparatus that, and I firmly believe this, to kind of hold and kind of give expression to that grief in at such a bigger level, and at a level that we think is really defining over the experience. And on the other hand, you've got the relationships of people all coming over to the house. I think in our culture, this is where it gets so tricky. If youth groups do often function as parachurches, and parachurches have their own leaders, I think so much is incumbent, and this is not fair, and this is not necessarily good, but so much is incumbent on how it gets interpreted by that person who's in their life, or set of persons who's in your life. So if you have a Young Life leader, I think, who's able to help them give expression to what's going on when they certainly go to, for instance, a funeral, or helps them give expression to what's going on in the context of the church, I think you're going to end up with an experience that for a young person is going to, you know, take them to a different place. The same could be said for a youth leader in a church situation. And again, in our culture, the generations are being broken down. It's not just happening because parachurches and churches are out there. I mean, every TVs are targeted to specific audiences and so forth. And so in some ways, we don't have generations that necessarily want to have to do with each other. Again, I think that's incumbent on the church to begin to help that. As a church, we'll actually start doing that. I think the parachurch may actually have to change and look different in this generation. I think it will have to anyway. But when it comes to grief, right now, the quandary that churches and parachurches find themselves in is that if the person who's invested in that person's life can help interpret that rightly, then I think that makes the biggest difference. Now, in some cases, you could say if that person's in a really knit church situation where they have, you know, multiple liturgical voices going on, but I think it mostly depends on that youth worker.
This would be for actually either one of you. Doesn't really matter. Sacraments are obviously a part of our Christian identity, so. When it comes to church ministry, a lot of them don't do sacraments because it's a dividing issue. Do you think that it's possible that some parachurch ministries are not really giving people a full identity in Christ without having sacraments and things of that nature?
You know, I don't know if any of you heard Jamie Smith speak this morning for his plenary speech, but I think the way he spoke of things this morning is a helpful lens to look at this. If you weren't there, he talked about the fact that we're driven by our loves, but the big issue that it takes practice to learn how to live a life. So whether that's putting on your clothes, you just do it now. Or driving a car. You just drive a car now. When you were 16, you had to think about everything. But it takes practice. And it's this, I think the role that when a parachurch is functioning well and healthily is that it is a part of the maybe early practice forming part of their life. So that Young Life can help kids start to develop practices in their life. They can help them start to the practice of putting Christ on, as Jamie spoke about this morning. And that, so yes, in that way, I think it is self-limiting in that it isn't going to do the the sacraments, which are a huge piece of that, is not going to be a piece that Young Life is, you're not going to have the sacraments done at a Young Life club. You know, you're not going to have communion there for a whole host of reasons. You're not going to do that. But that being said, because Young Life exists in someone's life organizationally for a period of time, maybe relationally for a much longer period of time, and I think that's the hope within an organization like Young Life, is that the relationships continue, that as an organization it can start to orient kids towards certain practices, starting to live a liturgical life. And that being a transformative thing. And again, I think as long as Young Life understands the role that it plays there, that's an incredible position to hold. Because by its very nature, I mean, Young Life was set up and other parachurch organizations were set up to go get the people who didn't want to step foot in a church. Now, just because they met a great Young Life leader or somebody, they don't quickly change that attitude. And I think if you're on a college campus, a lot of people who don't want to step foot into a church, it's because of some history or wound or something like that. So to quickly say, like, well, you're not in the full body of Christ until we get you here, we understand that for full participation in the body of Christ, the church is that. It is to be a part of that community. That probably isn't going to be one of the early steps. Okay, that's okay. But then I think all the more the parachurch organization or the campus ministry has to own the practices that it's going to try and help these people form in their life. And do those really, really well. But understand them and continue to speak of them as a part of a larger whole. And that the parachurch should be putting someone on a trajectory, or the campus ministry should be creating a trajectory. And again, to use Jamie's language, cultivating a desire in them. That yes, maybe we're not, you know, administering the sacraments at Young Life, but we are cultivating a desire in you that would lead you to the point where you would understand that you need that to sustain you. That I think is what when the parachurch is functioning well.
I'd simply add, I don't think parachurch should do baptism. I think there's biblical and the theological reasons that the parachurch shouldn't do that. Now with the Lord's Supper, I think there may be instances in which it's beneficial and good. If you hang around ministry very long, you've heard some really funny stories about things that have happened with the Lord's Supper in a parachurch context. So, I mean, there's issues with that, too. But, I mean, I think it's a little bit different how that works. But that said, what I think parachurches haven't always done very well, and I'd love to see them do better, and I think there's reasons that they can do better for things that Eric just said, is helping parachurch staff or volunteers or workers understand how is it that these sacraments, how is it that this liturgy shapes us to do what we do with them? And then if we understand that, what this means for us from the church, then how does that help us understand our work with them and their lives if it's in that early work and so forth? That's what I would say.
I'm interested in the parachurch and church relationship so that it's not either or but both, and how they can be integrated in their ministries, and if you have experiences with integrating and how it's done. I had heard Roger Nishioka, who is a Presbyterian youth minister, speak about the Mickey Mouse effect. Maybe you've heard that with the Mickey Mouse hat, with youth ministering being separate little ear on the cap of the church. And you could do the same for campus ministry or whatever paraministry, and saying that that was completely wrong because you have this identity within the youth group or whatever group it is that does not want to integrate then with the larger church body because they have been so completely separated. Now, we have had kids say at church camp that the camp is their church. And that, to me, is not a good thing. They need to develop that relationship. So if you have experience with integrating the two ministries so that people from both sides are going to each other's organization to help that, facilitate that, or how you see that being done?
Young Life has some church partnerships locally here. It's something that exists across the country, but the largest consolidation of those relationships are here in West Michigan and probably in Florida. Those are the two places that I'm aware of that have the most of them. But so there you have a youth pastor who works full-time for their church, but 40% of their time is given to be a Young Life leader in a local high school or middle school. I think, practically speaking, that's one of the better models that I've seen. And what I think you see there is you see a church who, in some respects, is trying to put Young Life out of business in the best way. That they are saying, we see the way you do things, which is, like I said, what really defines Young Life in so many ways. We see the way you're doing things. We want to do those things that way, too. Help us do that. And so that's where I think Young Life is helping teach the church, but then there's also this really wonderful relationship back to the church for Young Life. Now, does that mean that there's this incredible conduit of kids back into the church? No, it doesn't necessarily, into that specific congregation. But I think what it represents is even something that's really important for kids to see. Because to me, that is one of the rubs, and we've talked about this a little bit, is staff. One of the rubs, I think, for many Young Life staff people is they don't feel like what they are doing is really embraced by the church that they go to. And so there is a feeling of separation there, even for that person as a Young Life staff person or a Young Life volunteer, that the church doesn't want to own that work with them. So when it is time to bring a kid back to church, when that's the vibe and the posture of the church towards that staff person or that volunteer, that desire to draw that kid into that community is tainted by that experience. And so I think that's where if more congregations could get to the posture where they see what Young Life is doing or an organization like that is doing as being deeply valuable, more and more of those people would move into it. There's not a Young Life staff person that I've ever met in my life who wouldn't love to have 15 people from a local congregation be a part of their Young Life club as leadership. They would love to do that. But that's, you know, we're all looking for leaders. So it hasn't been the case that people are lining up to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all the issue of the local congregation. There's Young Life could work and should work harder at developing those relationships with the congregations. But because I think there is this sense, this false dichotomy that there's this versus thing, that those conversations are difficult to have. It's hard to find churches who really embrace the idea of going out the way Young Life does for whatever reason. So, yeah, I think it can happen, and it is happening in some places well, but that's the work.
Our time is up, so I want to thank Eric and Andy very much for your time.
And God.
Thank you, and for all your good comments. And I want to thank you for coming, and I want to end with a very short plug, all right? Very short plug. Here at Calvin College, as you may know, folks keep busy. Lots of programming, lots of activities, lots of events. One more event coming. Every other year, there is a Festival of Faith and Music. It takes place in the spring. And this is a wonderful opportunity where Christians can gather to think about the role of music and the arts, but especially music, in the life of faith, in churches, in the life of young adults. And so this will be taking place April 7 through 9, and Eric and I are partnering on a pre-conference event. And so we are putting on an event Thursday afternoon, April 7, just for youth leaders. And we are inviting youth leaders to come out, think and speak specifically about what are some of the issues in terms of young adults, youth, and music and faith. And we'll be hosting several events, including lunch and dinner, some discussion time, some opportunity to meet some of the speakers Thursday afternoon, and then the conference, of course, starts Thursday evening. For those of you who are coming to the conference and would like to be part of this pre-conference event, the pre-conference event is free, and we're going to have John Van Slotten come, who's also presenting at the conference, but he's going to meet with us for about an hour, hour and a half, and he just put out a book, The Day Metallica Came to Church. He is a pastor in Calgary, and this was John's attempt and interest to embrace the wider culture in a Christian fashion, and especially the music that young adults are just bombarded with. And so he has agreed to meet with that group on Thursday afternoon as well as some others. If you are interested in that or know somebody who might be interested in that, please grab one of these flyers and sign up. Thanks for coming.